Good morning. Certainly glad that you are here today, and we are thankful that we have this opportunity to worship God together. I believe today is June the 4th, isn't it? I got two more days, and it will be June the 6th. And on June the 6th, 1969, my wife and I were married. It will be 48 years this coming June the 6th. And I know I don't look that old, even 48, but she robbed the cradle, you know, so no. We're very glad to be able to celebrate our 48th anniversary soon. Thank you. Ironically, we got married on D-Day. And that may be symbolic of our marriage. I don't know. But I have a story to tell you about that, but not today. Maybe at another time. I think you would find it very interesting. But we look forward to celebrating that day on Tuesday. I think we have that day doctor's appointments all day. So it should be really an exciting day. So, all right. It's an unusual subject, I know, the Urim and the Thummim, and you probably wonder what in the world is going to come from that, but hopefully there's a point here. I intentionally select sermon titles like that to mess up the song leaders so they don't know what song. No, not really. But that's a little difficult to find a song that goes with the Urim and the Thummim, but we'll try to get some points across today. The book Days of Grace, a memoir, was written by Arthur Ashe and Arnold Rampersad. And you know Arthur Ashe, and those of us who are older, I'm sure know about him, a great tennis player. It recounts his hardships and his successes. It tells of his battle with AIDS, which he contracted when he received a blood transfusion following his open heart surgery, much like my wife in the surgery she had and contracted from a blood transfusion, hepatitis C. But Arthur Ashe was a man who had great character and admired other people who also placed a high value on integrity. In his book, he told this story. One day in Dallas in 1973, I was playing in the singles final of the World Championship Tennis Tournament. And my opponent was Stan Smith, a brilliant tennis player, but an even more impressive human being in his integrity. On one crucial point, I watched Smith storm forward, racing to intercept a ball about to bounce a second time off his side of the net. And when the point was over, I was sure the ball had bounced twice before he hit it and that the point was mine. Smith said he had reached the ball in time, and the umpire was baffled. I conceded the point. Later, after the match, which I lost, a reporter approached me. How could I have taken Smith's word on such an important point? And I said, I wouldn't take just anybody's word for it. But if Stan Smith says he got to the ball, he got to it. I trust his character. And he goes on to say, I've tried to live so that people would trust my character as I had trusted Stan Smith's character. I want to be seen as fair and honest, kind and polite. I want no stain on my character, no blemish on my reputation. Boy, isn't that great? Isn't that the way that all of us should want to live? And don't you wish that everyone with whom you dealt had high character, impeccable integrity, and Christian values. And yet it seems that we are suffering from a character deficiency in our country. Someone said that our national motto is no longer one nation under God. Instead, it is one nation under greed. There have been long shadows of doubt cast on the character of many public officials in recent months and years. And the false media has caused us to cynically wonder if anyone is trustworthy, if anyone has integrity. You know, it just amazes me some of the things that people are saying in public now. The vulgarities, the obscenities that people are using. It is startling. I didn't think I was going to use this, but I'll go ahead and say it. I think of what Kathy Griffin did, holding up the fake head of Donald Trump, our president. I think if it was in any other country, what would happen to her? What would happen to people who stood up and said things that were off base and off center and obscene? Many people would be shot to death in other countries. And I believe whenever a president's life is threatened like that, somebody ought to be imprisoned. We live in a free country, yes. But that's taking freedom far too far. There's a saying, I should have put it on the slide and I failed to do so, and I don't know why that slide is showing up correctly there. Okay. But this saying, I think, is very good. I'll repeat it twice because it's a little hard to comprehend all at one time. There's no limit to the depth a man can descend if he is crooked. There is no limit to the height a man can attain by remaining on the level. Again, there is no limit to the depth a man can descend if he is crooked. And there is no limit to the height a man can attain by remaining on the level. What comes to your mind when you think of Abraham? It may be Abram's willingness to leave Haran at the age of 75 and begin his journey toward the land of Canaan. I wonder how many of us would have done that, not having any idea where he was going, not knowing what the land was like, but merely at the direction of God, leaving home and going to a place where he'd never been. It may be Abram's faith and carrying out God's command to offer Isaac, his son of promise, on the altar of sacrifice. After waiting 25 years for that promise to be fulfilled, and then God had said, this is going to be the son, and then God says, offer him as a sacrifice. Would we have had that kind of faith? But even Abraham suffered with character flaws. Remember when Abraham and Sarah took matters into their own hands concerning the son whom God had promised them? Remember how that Sarah sent her handmaiden, Hagar, into Abraham, and through that union, Ishmael was born. And from that day, the Jewish people and the Arab people have been in conflict with one another. Jewish people coming through the line of Abraham, the Arab people coming through the line of Ishmael. And they have been fighting ever since. What amazes me is the first time the word integrity is found in the Bible. It is applied to a pagan king who showed more character than Abraham did. And that story is found in Genesis chapter 20, beginning in verses 1 through 13. I'm not going to read all of that, but it's a story you're probably familiar with. Abraham had gone with his wife into the land of Gerar. Gerar was a land or a city that was in the Philistine area. And when they had gone into this land, or actually before they'd gone into this land, Abraham had told Sarah, "Tell the people that you are my sister and that I am your brother." And that was a half-truth, because they both descended from the same father but had different mothers. She was a half-sister. And so they come to Gerar, and Abimelech is the king of Gerar. And it says in verse 2 that he took Sarah. And in a dream that night, God spoke to Abimelech, the king, and said, "You're a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she's married." Abimelech said, "Lord, will you slay a nation even though blameless? Did he not himself say to me, 'She's my sister'? And she herself said, 'He is my brother.' In the integrity of my heart and the innocence of my hands, I have done this." And God said to him, "I know that in the integrity of your heart you have done this. I also kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her." So Abraham didn't tell an outright lie. His half-truth, however, almost caused Abimelech and all of his people to be killed, because there was a death sentence that God had put on Abimelech and all the people of Gerar because of what the king had done. And God told Abimelech in this vision or in this dream that Abraham was a prophet, and that Abraham could pray for him and that he would be forgiven. And he said, "Then your life would be restored to you." And so Abimelech did what God told him to do, and his life was restored to him. Half-truths and deceptions can be extremely damaging. We think of the life of Ananias and Sapphira in Acts chapter 5, and how both of them were struck dead because of half-truths. The Hebrew word for integrity is found 16 times in the Old Testament. The Hebrew word thom means whole, complete, sound, unimpaired. And the word, the plural for the word thom is thummim. So the Urim and the Thummim were two stones that were placed, as you can see, the pouch that has the 12 stones there. They were placed in the pouch of the high priest's breastplate when he wore his ceremonial clothing to approach Jehovah in his official capacity, Exodus 28, verses 29 through 30. And the breastplate that you see there with the 12 stones, each stone represented a tribe of Israel. The full purpose and the significance of the Urim and the Thummim has remained somewhat of a mystery to inquisitive Bible students over the years. But the word Urim originates from a word that means to curse. And when the high priest had an important decision to make, in which he sought out the counsel of God, in some way, how I do not know, but in some way God would respond negatively through the Urim. Or he would respond affirmatively through the Thummim. And therefore the nation of Israel, as well as the high priest, would be cursed if they disobeyed God. But they would be blessed if they obeyed God. And the high priest and the people were to have the integrity to carry out the will of God instead of their own wills. And certainly that's the situation that we're in today. Do we have the integrity to carry out God's will in our own lives? If so, we are blessed. If not, we're cursed. You know, it's intriguing, it's intriguing to note that Paul draws this concept from Ephesians chapter 6, verses 14 and 15. There he described the spiritual armor which every Christian is instructed to wear. Stand firm, therefore, having girded your loins with truth, and having put on the breastplate of righteousness, and having shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace. So as Christians, we are to wear armor that completely covers us so that we can fight against the temptations that Satan sends our way, so that we can have integrity. The breastplate of righteousness symbolizes the high character, the impeccable integrity with which every Christian is to clothe himself. And if you don't get anything else from this lesson, please get this. We must have the integrity to be honest with God, to be honest with ourselves, and to be honest with everyone else. You know, there was a widow who rented a spare room, which she had to two boys that she did not know. At first she was very concerned because she did not know them, but then she stopped fretting about it. And she later told her neighbor why she was no longer worried about it. She said that she had decided that they were good boys. She said, they must be. They have lots of embroidered towels from the Young Men's Christian Association. All that glitters is not gold. I ran across a poem that I really think is meaningful in this particular lesson. I have to live with myself, and so I want to be fit for myself to know. I want to be able, as days go by, always to look myself straight in the eye. I don't want to stand with the setting sun and hate myself for things I have done. I don't want to keep on a closet shelf a lot of secrets about myself and fool myself as I come and go into thinking that nobody else will know the kind of man I really am. I don't want to dress up myself in sham. I want to go out with my head erect. I want to deserve all men's respect. But here in the struggle for fame and pelf, I want to be able to like myself. I don't want to look at myself and know that I'm bluster and bluff and empty show. I can never hide myself from me. I see what others may never see. I know what others may never know. I never can fool myself. And so, whatever happens, I want to be self-respecting and conscience-free. Isn't that the way that you want to live? Isn't that the way that you want to be known? I think of how that in the past, people have entered into contracts with one another by shaking hands. And that was good enough. That doesn't happen today. If you want to enter into a contract, think of Dave and how you just bought a house and, boy, you have to sign about 50 pages of paper. It's unbelievable. They want to tie you down. Everything wants to be tied down because they've been taken before. Because people didn't have the integrity to do what they said they'd do. There's a young couple that we know in at the White House Church. They sold a house, tried to sell a house for a while in another town, and when they moved to White House and they had difficulty doing that, and they went into debt and finally sold the house, and it was less than what they owed on the house. And they lived in near poverty for a number of years, if not in poverty, to pay off that loan, to make sure that what they said was right. I admire them for that. It was tough, but they did it. And I believe that we need to do it too. It may not be a house that you're concerned with, but in every area of life, we need to be people who are of integrity. And when people look at us, when we say something, they say, I know that must be true. Because he or she is a man or woman of integrity. I pray that the Lord can say the same thing about you and me that he told Satan about Job. The Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? For there is no one like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil. And he still holds fast his integrity, although you incited me against him to ruin him without cause. Job went through a great deal even after this, to a point that he had suffered so much and losing everything he had and losing his children, his wife told him, curse God and die. Job remained faithful. He was a man of integrity. And when you approach God and your fellow man, make certain that you're wearing your thummim, the gem of integrity. Only you know whether you have integrity with God, whether you've been truthful and honest with him or with others. If there is anyone in this audience this morning who needs to make amends, ask the prayers of this church, we hope that you'll respond in a way that we can help you. If there's anyone who needs to respond to become a Christian, we hope that you will respond, be baptized into Jesus Christ. What do you think? Do you have integrity with yourself and with God and with everyone else? Will you come while we stand and sing?
Oh, no longer to linger, charmed.